people, when they discover something in their pocket, they will freeze. Oops. And once they stop, then they just take it out and put it down. Because once you stop, you already made out a number, but put it down. That's the proper thing to do, the best thing to do. Then, once you put it down, you want it as covered, so it's valuable. But it's also the same. If you less $1,000, you get squeezed. I hope so. Less $1,000, less than 7 feet. You can basically go to find some way to try to hide it. And once they stop, then the data is taken out and put it down. Because once you stop, you already made out a number, but put it down. That's the proper thing to do, the best thing to do. Then, once you put it down, you want it as covered, so it's valuable. But it's also the same. If you less than $1,000, you get squeezed. I hope so. If you less than $1,000, less than 7 feet, you can basically go to find some way to try to hide it. But, again, it's a bit complicated. I want to end with one final conclusion because my time is up, and that is that carrying, believe it or not, is a problem not only on Shabbos but also on Yom Kippur. We grew up with rules for Yom Kippur, there's no problem carrying. That is an open statement. Usually it's no problem. Because usually when you carry, that's what's called a Tzara Hayom, the chemicals you cook on Yom Kippur. Purposes of Yom Kippur to make carry. If you carry something in Yom Kippur not for the purpose of the Yom Kippur, it's a serious problem. I'm sorry. You can't carry it all.
With the
Eruv. And Eruv used to make jokes when they were talking to the Eruv in New York. Said, I can take a shower, child. What? They make jokes in the Eruv. Be very careful. The Eruv is not on the bull plane. What the city is destroyed. The shopping school is the bull shop, they come out of an Eruv. So we should be very careful. Even in this community where when I once chanced across an organized sports league, terrible, absolutely terrible. Terrible, terrible thing. The schools that are best schools are uprooted. It shouldn't allow this to happen. Whatever we can to stop these things. But you know, when I was growing up, I didn't play ball. Not organized, but you know, that was just simple young. The person said the baby was allowed. But for young, it all does happen every week. It's just a few little kids. But on Shabbat, it really shouldn't be allowed. But even on young itself, you can't carry things which are not the Torah of young. There are all kinds of intricacies about this. And you carry a keychain, which has 6 keys on it, and you don't need half of it. One made or the pocket and maybe carry it if you don't really it's again this prior is a consciousness raising statement. And even on the opposite of this is no air carrying could be a problem. That's why if you look at this in the master, in the negative area of my area, it says you can be able to carry out Shabbos, and even on young what's up? No, even something could not have been on the other without an air conferred and an air to be around the Shabbos.
So what is the halacha on Shabbos, that you can only carry things that are the Tzorech Shabbos, like that you need?
Well, carrying a skew in the neighborhood is no better than carrying the house That's what the carrying is not needed. Well, not common. You have to know that it's not common. I'm embarrassed that I got my third potential topic for today. I want to thank you for coming on Super Sunday to submit this competition. And
never less than 80 minutes before sunrise. That means you can always dive in at 6 o'clock in the morning. Anytime you're in the sunrise, it's as late as 7:20. Go down at 6 o'clock in the morning if you have to. And the sunrise is coming much, much earlier. There are charts. I'll tell you how to figure out. I've got Primax charts. The guy told us that I'll even give you a copy for a small fee if you were asking for one. It's computerized to Riverdale. We have our own times here for Riverdale, New York. Yes, protect you. Anyway, so then you can tell you exactly what I love for. You should really wait till we see Yakir, because again, it's a more Krishna matter of Tila and Tittis and Jirba Krishna, but it overlays, that's a bit later. These are all organic type of attack. There's an interesting question in Tuscan, is it, once you cannot daven exactly at sunrise, is there anything worse than davening before sunrise as opposed to davening after sunrise? is relevant to many people. A big dispute. The Shulchan Aruch seems to say it is worse, better than after Shana than before. But the Pichodah, decided by the Be'er Lacham, where Moshe Feinstein's all agree, there's no difference. Once you have having at the Sikkim, doesn't have it happening later, or half an hour later, half an hour early, makes no difference. Very important for our first minute sometimes, it is significantly to be before sunrise, as many times a year. Okay, that's the Shabbos. Mincha is Ad HaErev. And the beautiful is so flag on Mincha. What does Ad HaErev mean? So again, Talmud is only gone. Erev means until the sun sets. That's it. Astronomical sunset as printed in the New York Times or in the chart. That's a totally the same thing. When it comes to Minor Off here, you know, that's basically the same thing. That's it. It's supposed to be finished, Shmona Esrei, before the sun sets. Now there are those, there's an Tosfos in Brachos in the first parak, and then the Gaon and say without that Tosfos, for the Tosfos, as long as you begin before the sun sets, you have grace to finish this one effort. Most of it takes only a minute anyway, so you feel looking at the watch, but there's no difference. But for those who got a little bit longer, so you really should really try to start that much before. If push comes to shove, you can rely on that. But beyond that, very hard to rely. The Mishnah Berurah says if you're stuck, you can dive in Mincha in what we call Bein HaShemeshes, in the twilight zone between the sun and the sun subs and the time that the stars come out, which for us is about a half an hour, about, depending on the time of the year. But it's very difficult to rely on. I wouldn't rely on that. I would say forget it, dive in Marv twice, which is called HaShlumim. So you have to be very careful to dive in, at least begin the dive in, but preferably to end the davening of Mincha before the sun sets. It's a very difficult thing to do sometimes. So I daven a little bit earlier. Most shuls are cut it to the last minute. These are people individually. Just to be a little more careful about that. And also we try very hard to finish the Mincha before the sun sets. Almost invariably, almost perhaps without any exception, we manage to do so for the private Shmona Esrei. The chazan is another matter. Sometimes it goes over a little bit. But we try to avoid that too. Okay. Mutzah is all day, but preferably before the seventh hour. That's almost irrelevant. There's almost no day of the year in the average shul when they flirt with the border of the seventh hour. There's only one exception, Simchas Torah. That's where you can go wrong. Even though Kippur we do it earlier, but Simchas Torah is so again, ideally we should try to do it davening before the seventh hour. And Erev Ein Lo Keva. What does Ein Lo Keva mean? So, in the context of our mission, it means there's no time. What do you mean there's no time? You daven Marav at 10 o'clock in the morning. Some of these Rebbes, you know, the clock is all off, but that's wrong. What do you mean, whatever? So the simple shot is Marav has no, there's not an independent time. You can daven Marav whenever you cannot daven Shachar or Mincha. The negative definition. And therefore, for this reason, you can only daven Marav until Alos HaShachar. And you may dive in Marv at the earliest sunset, but that's what Zman Mincha ends according to the Gros, as we explained before. That's why in our shul, we often dive in Mincha Marv back to back. So it's important that there be a division between them, namely sunset. So if we dive in Mincha, we'll finish 3 minutes before the sunset, we'll wait around and move around a few minutes. In fact, I don't like milling around, so keep this for the Russian horror. We just try to avoid milling around in shul. But what do we do? To learn to someone in 1 minute, whatever it is, but if we wait around a minute, a couple of minutes until the sun sets, and then boom, we start Baruchu and we start Marav. There's another possibility of Rabbi Yudah's view, which is Plaga Mincha. A Plaga Mincha is about an hour and a quarter, relative hours, before sunset, again, the way we follow. And that's another possibility of a cutoff point. One is the other tomorrow, the other tomorrow. If you wish, you could choose Rabbi Yudah's view. And that's a cutoff. Ideally, you should only do so if you're consistent every single day of the year. You're an early bird. You want to have a Mincha early and then have a Marav early. We have a custom that if there's any need for you to be inconsistent from day to day. In other words, especially for argument's sake in the summer. I want to have a Mincha until sunset 6 days a week and Marav following. But on Friday nights, well, convenient for me or whatever reason, I wanted to have a Mincha before Plaga Mincha and Marav immediately thereafter. We call it early Minyan, Friday evening. So we assume it's okay. for Tosefta. Shabbos, which is a mitzvah of Luther. Who does Shabbos give them a chance to enjoy themselves more? So we assume it's okay. However, most Poskim assume that an internal inconsistency, I mean, in the very same day, Davening Mincha, after Davening Mincha, and Maariv, before the sunset, an internal inconsistency is not permitted, even to daven with a minyan. To most authorities bring down, as opposed to the Baba Bab Beis and Bab, going all the way back to the beginning. And that's why in our shul, the early minyan takes care to meet and daven Mincha before the Plag HaMincha. There are many shuls in the city and throughout the world, I don't deny it, have a set time for Mincha all summer long. 7 o'clock, 7:30, that's what they do. Which is runs into what we call the problem of retarded disaster, an internal contradiction. It's not for me to be critical. These shuls do it, they must have a tradition and a source, and there are some authorities who sanction it, but the consensus view is that it really should be discouraged. And the other way is much better. The Davening early, Davening early already. In Kva Asva, the Davening early, Davening early. Okay. This is the time for Davening, very briefly. I should add that Davening so late, after Shabbos, after the fourth hour, creates all kinds of problems. According to the Shulchan Aruch, if you miss the fourth hour, you may not daven with the Brichas Kriya Shma. You can only say the Brachas Shema for an extra hour after the time for Shema, and not beyond that. Hasidim, daven late, especially on Shabbos, they often run past the Zman Tefillah. Ironically, the one who defended that position in this respect was the biggest misnagah, the Mishkan Es Yaakov. Quoted by the Mishnah Brewer, who says, even the Shulchan Aruch said, you can't do it, I think you can do it. For those who daven the full group of Krishna, until Chatzos, until midpoint of the day, have a basis. Today, the midpoint of the day is 11:40. It varies. This is about the earliest time of the year, it's 11:40. It's the Zman for Chatzos. Zman Tefillah now, adventure, is before 10 o'clock. The Zman Krishna is good up to 9, and it's not a full hour, it's a relative hour these days. So, I have half my audience are women. And they probably wonder, what am I talking so much? Women are taught that the mitzvahs I say, says man, you're over. They don't have to follow these times, this time, that time, the next time. What's going on over here? Are women obligated to daven in the first place? So there's a big dispute. The Mishnah says, yes, Mishnah and Kirtara. Noshim Machayavas Ketila. But the obvious question is, what happens to the rule of man, Groma? Women should be exempt from the mitzvah of davening. So here we have two texts, two different Gisos, and I'll talk from the base. Our guess is that they're obligated to daven. Why? The Rachamenimu. But even though technically speaking they should have been exempt because it's Mangarama, but they have to ask for mercy. If this is the case, the women are obligated to say Shemoneh Esrei the same as men. Same as men. Shachri, Mincha, Meir, perhaps not. Because Ma'av, because in the Gemara, Tfilas, Arvis, Rishus, technically speaking, optional. Even though it's not really optional, you really have to daven tonight. But at least it started off as being optional, and it's somewhat optional. The women never accepted it. That's what the Mishnah Brewer says. So those who do, those who don't. But Shabbos, and also according to the Mishnah Brewer, women have to daven, unless, as is written in the biography of the Chabad Chaim, which is written by his own son, who should know what's going on in the house. But his father, the Heilige Chabad Chaim, who paskens that all women have to daven, told his mother she shouldn't daven. Now what kind of business is this? Practice what you preach. No, what he meant was, shouldn't daven as long as the little children were underfoot. As long as he's busy taking care of the little children, you start daven, all of a sudden start screaming, tumbling. Last night someone came to our shul at Yotzai. He brought two little kids, I don't think shul last night. But two little boys into the shul who had no choice, I guess his wife wasn't home, and took him in. He was so well behaved. It was terrific. Straight through Kriya Shema, I had this younger one transfixed looking at me. And I was looking back at him. Through the whole Kriya Shema, it was fixated, it was fantastic. Quiet straight through. Came to Shemoneh Esrei, so everyone else looked away. Everyone closed their eyes, looked in the sitter, and started saying, all of a sudden, the poor guy standing by the oven, and his kids are crawling over each other. Now I know this is what the Chofetz Chaim told me, the Rebbe from Chofetz Chaim, don't daven because you're going to start screaming in the room. So he said she was exempt. But when the children got older, according to Mishnah Berurah, you're obligated to daven. I must tell you that the custom was not that way. Women did not traditionally daven Shmoneh Esrei every single day, even if there were no children around. And the Shulchan Aruch does not require it. So the Shulchan Aruch follows the view of the Rambam, who maintains that he has a different text. But in other words, the Rambam. The response, the Rambam understands that there are two levels of tefillah. Tefillah min HaTorah and tefillah min the Rabbanon. Tefillah min HaTorah has no time. Once a day, any time of the day, not time related. That's what women are obligated to do. Tefillah min the Rabbanon, the 18 brachos, that's time dependent, and they're exempt from doing this. That's the Rambam's text, and in the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam. If that's the case, women are only obligated to fulfill what's called a tefillah min HaTorah. What's that? The Rambam explains three elements of that. Sheva, Bakasha, Hodor. Praise, request, and thanksgiving. So then Noah Avraham says that the women fulfilled the mitzvah of tefillah, but China, they said, when they would wake up in the morning, they would wash the feet of Sedayim, they some kind of a tchina, some kind of a supplication, and that suffice. But the question is, what do you mean it suffice? What happened to the Sheva? What happened to the Hodor? But my guess is what it means is, they said Modani, which is a Hodor, Modani, right at the beginning. And they probably made a Sheva where they only did a Sedayim, or Asher Yotza, or something like that, which the women always traditionally did. So all that was missing from their daily routine was their bakasha. They said a small little tchina, some supplication, when they would get up in the morning and wash their hands, coming under the tent. That's how they fulfilled the mitzvah of Torah. The Mogan of Rome said that's what they did. And then those women who rely on us even today have a very good basis. Those who daven twice this one. That's right. They also have a good basis. So there's two different approaches as far as the women are concerned. Okay. This takes care of the time for tefillah. If you have any questions, I'll take them now. This is part one. Yes. We try to finish. You're right, on Yom Kippur we don't finish. The Chaz is not finished Muslims by the end of the seventh hour on Yom Kippur. That's true. But going to Chatzilah, it's almost impossible. It's not impossible, but it just doesn't work. Yes. Well, here it is. Again, according to the Rambam, they can daven whenever they want. Because the only idea, they can daven any tefillah any time of the day. According to the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, they should be davening at the right time. If you're already going to daven, daven Shabbat in its right time, and minute in its right time. Okay? That's the same dispute. Okay? No more questions in the first part. But that takes care of the time of davening. What about the place for davening? What do you mean the place for davening? Daven wherever you want. So first of all, the place for davening is in shul. Ideally in shul. Certainly for men. Well, they're required to partake of tefillah b'tzibur. Women are exempt from all communal obligations. That's the general rule. Nevertheless, if they're able to daven, and they're able to daven in shul, it's certainly preferred. It's certainly preferred. Better. If they can, they can. They can't, they can't. In many places in Europe, they didn't have any place for them to daven. They didn't want to come to shul to daven. A variety of reasons. All kinds of other activities that went on in shul, which otherwise would not take place. Today's world, of course, they take place outside of shul, so the better off is coming to shul. So that's the place from that perspective. But also, in terms of place, have in mind certain places which you may not have in at all. For example, the whole third parish talks about places. A place where there is a bathroom, a place like he said, not a davening. The big question is, are bathrooms like old bathrooms? I'm not kidding. Before the summer starts, you can daven in the bathroom, in our bathroom. I'm not recommending this at all. But there are two reasons why our bathrooms might not be considered bathrooms. Number one, they are multi-purpose rooms. Most people in what we call a bathroom today, not only do they take care of their personal needs, to use the euphemism, but they also brush their teeth, and maybe they hang their laundry, and wash their face. And having pour the medicines that are there, and maybe they shave there, and whatever is going on there. It's a multi-purpose room. Not to have a phone there, a fax there. I mean, I don't know what people are doing there anymore. So, I mean, now these days, TV, I don't know what goes on there. The whole room. The whole room. So that's why it's not miyuchad, it's not designated exclusively for that purpose, and then it loses status. That's suggested by Rav Henkensel in his say. Chazanish is a different angle on it. Our bathrooms have, where we have plumbing, where things flush down, maybe comparable to basic piece of the parsoi, the last gemara in the third parak, which according to some does not have a status of a regular bathroom. So you can make a case, but don't do it. I'm not telling you to do it. What's more important for our purpose is knowing about in the bathroom. So what about if there's a child who's underage? I was a little bit frightened yesterday. In the middle of Krishna, this kid unzips his Velcro little case there and pulls out a pamphlet. I thought it was telling his fault or something. I hope he wasn't, because I was driving to Shimon Esra. I smelled nothing. But in some places, you wouldn't let anyone out into shul before you were trained. That's the whole dimple ceremony, the whole business, which is, of course, you know, a great idea. So South America. But even if you're at home, you know, you want a bench, a daven at home, or say a bracha, and the baby running around, and they may not be clean, it's a big problem. Big problem. By the way, this could apply to a certain case of adult. I had a shout out this yesterday, where Ralph called me up, someone who unfortunately is the catheter, and the whole question, may he daven things are going on underneath, things have been pouring into bags, into tubes. So the rule is that if there's urine there and it's covered up, it's okay. If, however, there's the excrement, then it's a big problem with the smell. And the whole problem, you have to empty out the bag, and then it's a big problem. That's just the question in each individual bag. So the bottom line for us, you may not doubt it in such a circumstance. It's a very serious problem. Additionally, the Gemara in the same parak and parak Gimel talks about problems of not just of what's there in terms of tzora and their agrayim, but also in terms of erva. For example, if a woman who's not dressed in front of a man, he may not say shema, he may not daven, things of this nature. In that same daf, the Gemara tells us not only she's completely naked, it says not allowed, but even if what's called a tefa, the size of the fist, or the parts of the body that should be covered are exposed, you're not supposed to daven there, or say krishna there, or bench there. You're not supposed to do it, because it's called tefa kisha erva. This could be a problem in many places. This is a serious problem. And by the way, it exists in your own house. In your own house, so a woman is not required to go dressed with everything covered in her own, the privacy of her home. Nonetheless, if a husband wants to bench, for example, you may not do so until these parts of the body are covered. Moreover, the Gemara says there, say of each other, a woman is married, required to cover her hair, and the man may not bench or say Krishna if his wife, even his own wife, is in his line of sight because it has the status of an erva. The same Gemara that says, call these erva, that a person should not be davening if there's a singing voice of women. It's a big question. Some schools they have, you know, congregational singing and the women sing louder than the men, and you can hear them in the middle of Shema. And all of a sudden says younger than the ladies are louder than the men. That's a big problem. Alright, so some say you can't have to just tell one single voice. Sometimes this lady yells out at the top of her lungs, you can see everyone, make sure everyone hears her. That's a problem. That's a big problem. So we don't sing our Shema Yisrael like that. And when we do sing, usually the men are louder. But it is a problem. It's a problem not only in terms of Krishna, it's a problem in general terms. They extend beyond the scope of Krishna and Tila, but I wanted to mention it because that's quoted in this context as well. This, therefore, is what I wanted to call the place for davening. We discussed the time for davening and the place for davening. Are there any questions? Yes. If you're down near a tree, watch your back. I mean, really, if you're safety first. Safety first. We used to always dive in payphones. These are payphone booths. All of a sudden, he's come out and there was no booth anymore. Because they saw Superman and went to change, and all of a sudden the booth wasn't there. I don't know. But if any of the guy wants to dive, he's diving in the subway. And it's phone booth. And almost, you know, now they're exposed. You know, many people don't know what phone booths look like. You want to come see a phone booth, young man? Good. We used to have maybe all these cases of glass, and so secure and private. And we used to stay in the subway and pick up the phone and talk to God. You know, that the people would, if we didn't have the phone picked up, the guy wants to get in, you know, next. So we have to pick up the phone. And, you know, a very serious conversation with the bones from it. How does your monologue? You talk, you talk, you talk. That is just about talking from it. Everybody's had this stuff. So, you don't know, I was waiting for it. So that was what we get stuck in the subway. We couldn't make a track of time for Minnesota. That's what we used to do. Now it's much more complicated. So I would dive it out and you walk beyond that. I have to say to you, if you can't have Kavanah, the Gemara says, they didn't get off their horses. They were diving on horseback while they were riding for fear that they would not be able to catch it when they got off. It's sent to the past place. You can have it in the car. You get stuck. You know, it can happen to you. There's plenty of time for Minnesota. Highway closed. No moves for 2 hours. That can happen. That's what you do on Minnesota. But it was closed for 3 feet straight. Turn off the ignition. And dive in Minnesota. Put the car in reverse for 3 steps, you know, and then go back and... Yeah. I know, in America we don't, in America the minute gets a call to grow, period. So that's our minute. That's the minute of the yeshivas here in America. People love them, what's going on now. When I grew up, that's how it was. And our yeshiva is still the same way, for sure. I don't know if yeshiva has changed, I don't know if it's more of don't know. I should mention that place in davening, we spoke about in Shabbos, for sure, Mokom Kavua. First, we tried to have a set place for davening, even within your house, for sure. So davening is the same place. And in shul as well, try to have the same seat for davening with the shul. We should also try to face east. This shul faces east. Many shuls do not face east, they face north. The one that's rich, Moses and Babavasa, are also Shiyash and Yatskun. The one that's rich, you face north. So the Babavasa, many schools are trying to, it works for some of them, told. But face north is a school that's very, very rich. It's just tilt a little bit to the east. Actually, in our school, it's a little bit east. But west is the problem. There was one school that faced north, they just destroyed it. There's a school that faced north, they just demolished the whole school. Took it down. They really took it. Then the whole shul to the face west. That's what we do next in this community. It's becoming a very fundamentalist. I don't know what's going to happen. Speak to people on the board. They demolish the shul to the face west. I don't know. What are we going to do next? Anyway, so that's the place for davening. If there are no more questions, we'll go to the final topic, which is preparation for davening. That's a very important topic. We'll go into davening and notice I have not discussed davening itself, but davening itself. I think we give a 2 minute blurb about davening itself. The main point of davening is kavana. Where it say, tefila b'li kavana is kaguf b'li neshama. The people, unfortunately, they davening, they mutter the words, some people skip half the words, some people say the words but they don't have any idea any clue what they mean, or just too frazzled or too rushed to really focus on it. That's a shame. If you're already taking out time from your busy day of davening, to daven right, and say the words and have in mind what they mean. Daven is all about. The first bracha is even more important than the others. You really have to kavanah what the word means. The first bracha means at the beginning until Magen Avraham. Very important. Very important. To know what these words mean. Critical. One bracha in the fifth parak. Oh, got a parak in two. So we talked about that. If you don't have kavanah, you don't fulfill the mitzvah really. The question is, do you daven the second time? But the sad commentary is you don't daven the second time. You know why? You don't come on the second time either. That's very sad. But it could be, maybe you are okay with that kavanah to the other, but certainly you shouldn't risk it. Try to have kavanah at least for the first bracha, and ideally through the entire Shmoneh Esrei. There's certain places for us to bow in the Shmoneh Esrei, of course, you should understand. This Chazal is a chapter 2, because the pastor listened to it, shouldn't read the papers, shouldn't learn Gemara, it's supposed to concentrate on the Chazal of Shabbos. These are some important halakhas. There are many, many more, but I'm going to discuss for the moment now, like what preparation for davening. And if there's more time at the end, we can discuss other halakhas which we did not talk about yet. Preparation for davening is so important that the Gemara tells you again in Brachas, and Chassidim and Rishonim, they spend an hour preparing for davening. And then an hour after davening, so to recover. We're long gone, we're on the railroad already, but there's 4 years. What I want to talk about, though, is what you may do before davening, what you may not do before davening. It's very important. Again, Gemara's and Brachas all over the place. The Gemara talks about a person taking care of his needs before davening. Most of you know how to do it. Also, other shiata chafoto for the matzilim. Not permitted to take care of your needs, your own personal needs, business needs. Not supposed to go on a trip before davening. It's all talking about chakras. And the fundamental question is, are these intrinsic prohibitions? Or are they prohibitions lest you forget? It's a difference. If you know you won't forget, you go to a meeting every single day, someone's going to remind you, things of this nature. So it seems to me, from the Talmudic analysis of the sources in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, that we assume that these prohibitions are only lest you forget. And therefore, if you're not going to forget, it's permissible. Otherwise, it's big trouble. Let's say, for example, the person's on the way to shul, and his wife tells him, on the way out of shul, take down the garbage, or even less than that, press the button on the washing machine, on the dryer, on the oven. How can you do it? You're taking care of your own personal needs before that. So on Arab Shabbos, go out, for sure. To prepare for Shabbos, but on plain day. So in my opinion, it's permissible, but it's not going to take you, distract you, you're not going to forget. And it's only if you get involved in a complicated business deal, then it's a problem. By the way, even learning is a problem. Those who learn with great diligence and they get involved, they Gemara too much, so they really shouldn't be learning before davening. You have certain reasons in that respect. But today, the best thing for you is your alarm watch. You don't have one, I'm afraid, but most of you sure do. So if you are doing something or other, you know you're davening at 7:30, it takes you 5 minutes of beep, beep, beep. At 7:25 or 7:20 it goes off. That's your Shaliach. It doesn't forget that Shaliach. It works. That's going to work to permit these activities. And by contrast, most authorities assume that eating is an intrinsic prohibition. The prohibition against eating before Shabbos is not merely based on the fact that you may forget to eat, which of course is true. But more than that, eating is an intrinsic prohibition. It's even a pasuk quote. Well, so for again, the first question, first prayer. Well, so for Al Adam, don't eat before Ashkes Talu Al Dinkan, before you actually pray for your blood, for your life. And therefore, you're not supposed to eat before davening. Ideally, you shouldn't eat anything at all before davening. Zero. Even drinking water is not so simple. So for now, the Rambam machine is not so allowed. So I tell people, just don't. But I'm hungry, but I'm thirsty. How hungry and thirsty are you really? Really, honestly, you're that hungry, that thirsty. If you're sick, okay, you're sick, you're sick. A lot of you drink, a lot you have to do. But most men aren't that sick. Obviously, but how can I rest? I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we don't finish davening until 8 o'clock. I can't rest for 2 hours. The answer is daven earlier. Find an earlier minion, or if not, daven by yourself. Then it's Shabbos. How can I rest? The shul goes things at 11 o'clock in the morning. I woke up at 7. I can't go 4 hours at eat. So I'm sorry to give the answer. I don't want to publicize it. The answer is, daven Hashkama or something like that. Daven be a fetus and come to shul later with the Kedusha. But to eat before daven really is not allowed. Now I know, you don't have to tell me, but in certain circles, it's very good eat before davening, and they have coffee and cake and all kinds of breakfast and everything. I know. And I have a way to justify it. The way to justify it is that these people maintain that the prohibition against eating before Shabbos is the same as the prohibition of doing business before Shabbos. Lest you forget. And therefore they feel if they go to davening and shul every single day, they're not going to forget. There is basis for it. Because the Shulchan Aruch has two views in the following question. What if a person began eating before dawn? May continue. Two views. What are we talking about? If it's an intrinsic prohibition, you may not continue. If it's a matter of forgetting, so we find elsewhere precedent, it's a mincha for marriage, and once you began before the witching hour, you may continue. So those two views are arguing this point. Although we follow the strict view, since the lenient view is found in Shulchan Aruch, certainly those who have a leniency here too are eating before davening, even if starting later, rely on this view, and they say we're not going to forget because we have the davening minyan, etc., etc. So there is a basis, but I don't recommend it at all. Some say I don't have the water. Shulchan Aruch says that, not everyone agrees. Some say you're allowed to have caffeine. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't say the word caffeine, but he says it's like the same thing. But you have to have coffee, because otherwise, ein misyashev da'ato buta. Without the coffee, you just can't function. He commits it. I think he's right. But you're so sick. You're a junkie, you're a druggie. If you can't function in the morning unless you have your jolt of caffeine, never, then you're allowed to take your drugs every morning before you daven shacharis. You can't live for half an hour daven shacharis for your drugs. Now, my tone of voice, you understand my opinion on this man, don't become addicted. I have a story about this, which I will repeat. Some years ago, I learned to mincha marriage before Shana. Sure. I was discussing various matters, and I can't tell different as follows. But Rabbi Lamb of Yeshiva University published an article with a few doctors in JAMA, the medical magazine, about the problem she had. Terrible, terrible problem. She was first on Kippur, who got terrible migraine headaches year after year after year. He didn't know what to do with it, but he couldn't function. Didn't know why. He finally realized what was going on. It was caffeine withdrawal. He was a 5-cup-a-day man, or whatever, 10-cup-a-day man, and all of a sudden, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, no caffeine since yesterday at 5, which is by his death. So the way out of it is, some should take caffeine, so pilot for Yom Kippur. Okay. Or, he said, instead of going cold turkey, wean yourself away from it gradually. Until there are Saras Yemei Tshuva, every day 1 cup less of coffee, and but then you're used to it. So I said this to the good people in Shulchan, to me it's ridiculous. Just cut it out completely. It's such an addiction. Terrible, cut it out. And it's not even healthy for you. So we have, they say it's not healthy. We have been our school then a PhD in biology, so yeah, raises his hands, we're not healthy. It's funny, the brain, rats, this, I don't know, okay. Good. I said nothing of it. 6 months later, this fellow came to my house for the Seder. And after the meal, my wife offered and wants coffee or tea. Says, coffee? I stopped drinking coffee 6 months ago. Some of the rabbis speak to the Chamarav, and there's just 12 people in the shul. They say, I stopped. No one's listening. The guy stopped drinking coffee. I told him he's gone back to it. Apparently for a long time he wasn't drinking coffee because I gave a shiur to him in the chamar. I think you're a good thing, you should try to, you won't be don't think of any addiction. If you can avoid it, you should. But if you're still addicted, you're allowed to drink the coffee before davening. That's the only thing. So with sugar, without sugar, whatever it's necessary for you to get the coffee down, that's what the permission is. Okay, that's as far as eating before davening. What you may not do is give shalom before davening. That's what you go into someone's house and shalom aleichem, aleichem shalom, how are you? And that seems to be an intrinsic prohibition. And therefore you're not supposed to do it, not because you may forget the davening. But more than that, you're just not supposed to do it. Especially use the word shalom. The very coolest say hello, say good morning. But ideally you shouldn't go to anybody, but rather what you should do, if you meet someone in the street, you're allowed to greet the person. If you meet someone as you're walking into shul, and before you run into someone, you don't have to ignore them completely. If you go over to greet someone, that shouldn't be done. That's the quote in Shulchan Aruch. It's going to base on the Gemara's in the Sefer Brachos. Now, in terms of preparation for davening, this also includes how you dress and how you prepare your body for davening. Tosfos say, when the person davens, the body has to be prepared. It means you have to go to the bathroom, you go before you're done. person should have his hands clean before davening. Maybe the scriptures, although which actually come up more in the ninth paragraph, but we'll get to soon. There we are taught you're supposed to wash hands before davening, and we have an interesting custom. We wash, again, in Minigar Amor, we wash our hands before davening in the morning, but not necessarily in the afternoon or evening. And if we do, we make a bracha in the morning, but not in the afternoon or evening. The Vilna Gaon says, no, that's an artificial distinction. The Vilna Gaon says, if you're washing because you have to daven, what's the difference in shakas, minigar amor? Each time you wash with a cup, and they got a fifth time, that's all. So we call the groaning, because the father of the God, that's what they do. But most of them are not level, we don't do that. So the distinction between shakas on one hand, and minigar amor on the other. But why? Why is that so? Big problem. Some say, well, the morning is different because the morning, you are a bria chadash, we're a new creature. New creation every morning, and therefore, this is why we require to wash with a cup, with the coins, with the best of midrash, and make a bracha, as opposed to minchah na, when we're not a new creature anymore. Because that's a big difference. When do you make the bracha in the morning? If you follow the view of the Vilna Gaon, you make the bracha just before shakas. And if you're up an hour before, and you're learning or doing work, you postpone the bracha until just before shakas. If you follow the other view of the Rashba, you make the bracha as soon as you wake up. Because you're now a Briya Chadash, so even though you're going to daven an hour from now, you make the bracha as soon as you get up. It's a big problem. What do? You can't make everybody happy. And you run into a potential problem of bracha levatala. Because if the Vilna Gaon is right, you make the bracha an hour before, and you have to get building into it, because the bracha levatala. If the Rashba is right, and you make the bracha later on, and then it's a bracha levatala. You made it an hour ago. It's a big problem. So most of them take care of the problem by getting up at the very last minute before davening. We're very poor. We're running into problems with the bracha. But there's another problem. The Gemara has at the end of the Masechta, talks about the order of the day. And you get up in the morning, you do this. And the time there quoted by Ruach Ra. It's quoted in the Gemara on Shabbos, next Masechta, that there are certain evil spirits which dwell on the hands, which you have to wash three times when you wake up in the morning to eliminate them. Nothing to do with our discussion from until now. You don't make a brook on that. You don't need a cup for that practice. But you have to get rid of Ruach Ra. But here's the problem. When Mr. Brewer says, he's a big mountain. He's a Ruach Ra man. And in the opening page of the Brewer, wake up in the morning, right away you wash hands. You can't walk 4 cubits, you can't walk 4 hours, you can't have the water under the bed, and you can't, all this holy coolness we have. You can't even, you wake up, you have no right to twist and turn the bed in for a minute. Second you get up, boom, you put your hands in the water. What he says, you're up well. But no, there's a big problem. So you wash your hands 3 times, get rid of the rough oil, you're using a cup. Teacher, so make a right then and there, I'll feel for that. Call it a Vilna Gaon. I don't know about this time. You're going to get dirty, go to the bathroom. You're going to cut your shoes. Yeah. So many folks can say that the Mr. Brewer took it a little bit too far. It's not found anywhere that you may not leave it on you, or you may not walk with it. All it says in the Gemara is you may not touch your eyes, your ears, your nose, any of the body orifices before you wash it off. And even there, the Magen Avraham says, the stein of Atzvon used to be deadly. Nowadays, the doctors say it doesn't do anything. But all right, we're afraid maybe it's got some power. So we wouldn't touch these parts of the body. But therefore, it seems to me, if a person wakes up in the morning early, anytime, and you have an urge to go to the bathroom, that it's better to go to the bathroom right away before you even wash your hands. Because to hold it in, as you say, it's the only way to do it. That's where the chakra. To keep the Ruach Ra on you for an extra bit of time is not really a prohibition that you find anywhere in the Gemara. Okay, great. So you relieve yourself, and now you want to wash your hands 3 times. Get rid of the Ruach Ra as soon as possible. Problem again. You wash your hands then, 3 times with the cup. Now, the front of the rash, you can make a bracha right then and there. But you're still going to get hands dirty, so you get dressed, you touch your shoes. And again, you're stuck on the same bind. According to the Rashi, you have to wash the bracha at the earlier time. According to the Vilna Gaon at the later time. What do you do now? You're in trouble. There's no way out of this one. I have a way out. My own original way out. My eyes are colored. When you wash hands three times, two of these things on the bathroom, you don't use a cup. Just let the water run on the sink and run around it three times. Seems to me that it's one of the most authorities, I'm not an expert in the occult, it's one of the most experts, the Ruach was eliminated thereby, and therefore you take care of that problem. But you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of mosquitoes dying from a cup because the force was not really a cup, and therefore you can then get dressed. Now when you walk with a cup, after you finish getting dressed, your hands are already clean, so you took the juice for the last time. Then you can make a bracha about the time, which is the perfect time, both according to the normal dawn and even according to the last blow. The only time is going to be if you wake up at 5 in the morning, dabbing at 8, and your hands get dirty in the interim, you have a slight problem on your hands. I would say we follow the earlier time. That's the limit of draws to make the bracha at the earlier time. Okay, so this is a question. Kept preparing yourself for davening in this fast. We have to be very careful, and also how we dress when we daven. The word preparing is used in that kind of keep calm, lichrat, elokecha, Yisrael. Prepare Yisrael before your God, if you're going to read Hashem and daven. So how do you prepare? So a couple of descriptions. Number one, he's a friend of God. What, I don't know what they were saying. So I found this. They meant, Pitom, the trash of a Kefa Yisrael. A person should put on a garment to prepare to daven before Hashem. You know, just walk in like this. So my response is, that you're right. You're a Pusik. You always dress just perfectly. So the only way, the only thing to add is to put on a garment. But unfortunately, we don't dress it all the time. So we have other ways in which we can prepare ourselves. How so? A person walks on the shirt all day long. So he wants a dollar, puts on a jacket. Of course,